Welcome back to Inside the Boardroom, a podcast from the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. I'm Jamie Plusser, the Assistant Dean for Marketing and Communications. Our goal with this series is to bring you thoughts, ideas, inspiration, and points of view from business leaders and academic leaders from Minnesota and beyond. This episode features a conversation between Sri Zaheer, Dean of the Carlson School, and Tony Dungy. Dungy is a 1978 grad of the University of Minnesota's Business School and a former NFL head coach. During his time with the Indianapolis Colts, he became the first Black head coach to win a Super Bowl. In his discussion with the dean, Dungy talked about the importance of goals, integrity, discipline, and overcoming adversity. Let's go to the conversation.
It is quite an honor to be here. It's hard for me to believe that 47 years ago, I started my journey and arrived at the University of Minnesota. I can still remember it today, pulling in, getting off the plane and coming onto campus, and just unbelievable. I was there on a football scholarship, but a big, big part of my decision was the business school. I knew I'd get a great education. It was a great process. I also knew there were a lot of Fortune 500 companies in the Twin Cities area, and that sold me on coming to the University of Minnesota. Tell you my thought process as a 17-year-old at the time. I thought I would get a degree in business administration. I thought I would come to the university and play some excellent football, and that I would go to the NFL and have a long, prosperous career. I'd build some capital and be able to start my own business. That's kind of how I was thinking as a 17-year-old, but it was a good plan. Didn't come to fruition, but fortunately God had a better plan, other plans. And my career actually there started off perfectly. I came in to the university with the blessing of my parents, even though my mom was a Michigan State grad and my dad was a Michigan grad. They were okay with me going to Minnesota and making my own choice. Both of my parents were teachers. They stressed education. They stressed achievement. But both of them were also Christians, and they created an atmosphere in our home that we followed the Bible and that we wanted to do things the Lord's way. My mom's favorite verse that she just pounded into my head over and over again was Matthew 16:26. What would it profit a man to gain the whole world but forfeit his soul? So I always had that in the back of my mind as my parents stressed doing things the right way, getting a good education, becoming an achiever, becoming someone that was going to help your community and your society. So that's kind of the background I had when I came as a 17-year-old freshman. And then as God would have it, on one of my first days on campus, something else happened that kind of solidified all that. A gentleman by the name of Jim Brewer just came back to the university. Jim was an All-American basketball player. He had been the top pick in the NBA draft. He was just coming back from the Olympics. And I happened to meet him at Behrman Athletic Building. And we talked for a little bit. He welcomed me and wished me luck. But then he said something that really stuck with me. He said, "Hey, you're going to come. I know you want to have a great athletic career, but make sure you don't shortchange your academics. You're coming to a great institution. If you don't leave here with a degree, you will have cheated yourself. And you're a bad person to cheat. No one should cheat themselves." And that had an impact on me, because I thought, gosh, if Jim Brewer can do all this and go to the Olympics and play overseas and come back and still graduate on time, that's something I want to do. So that really helped me. And as I prepared for my first classes that fall, I was excited. I was really pumped up, and I thought I would learn a lot about business. I'd learn the economics and statistics and all the macro things. And that happened, but I'll tell you, my most interesting classes at the Carlson School were the management classes, where you kind of dove into what does it take to create successful environments? How do you work with people? The courses on leadership. I didn't realize it at the time, but God was actually preparing me. He was preparing me for what he had in mind, which was to go on and be a coach. I didn't know that in 1973, 1974, but in the meantime, I had a wonderful career. I enjoyed my college life thoroughly. I did get to play quarterback for the U for 4 years, and it was great. Had some wonderful teammates. We didn't win as much as we would have liked to, never made it to the Rose Bowl, but had an awesome time. And it didn't, though, lead up to what I had hoped for. And what I'd hoped for and dreamed for was an NFL job as a quarterback. So in 1977, the NFL draft came and went. I didn't get selected. And that really led to my first big business decision that I had to make. I had an offer to play quarterback in the Canadian Football League for the Montreal Alouettes. They offered me a six-figure signing bonus, a $50,000 salary, which at that time was huge, and it was pretty much guaranteed. Then I got a call from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they didn't need me as a quarterback. They wanted to see if I was interested in changing positions. Because I would be changing positions, they said they could only offer me a $2,000 signing bonus and $20,000 if I made the team. So I had to make a business decision. Do I take the big contract, the guaranteed money, or do I go to Pittsburgh and take my chances? And I prayed about it. And to this day, I'm still not sure why I decided to go to Pittsburgh. It was illogical. It didn't make sense. And no one could really figure out what I was doing, but something just inside of me, I said, I want to play with the best. I want to play in the NFL, and I've got a chance to do that. I have to give it a try. So I went to Pittsburgh, and it turned out to be the best decision that I could have made. I didn't know it at the time, but my life would change because of the people that I was around. And one of those people was the coach there, a gentleman by the name of Chuck Knoll. Coach Knoll was just tremendous. When I got there, they had already won two Super Bowls. He had a wonderful team in place. And I remember sitting down at the first meeting and Coach Knoll saying, welcome to the National Football League. You're now getting paid to play football, so that makes it your profession. But don't make football your life. If you make football your whole life, you're going to leave the game disappointed. My job as your coach is to try to help you find out what's going to fulfill you, what's going to sustain you, what's your life's work going to be. And I remember writing that down and just thinking, gosh, this is not what I expected to hear, not from a two-time Super Bowl winning coach. I thought he was going to tell me that I had to pour my whole life and my whole soul and everything into this job if I were going to make it successful. And he said, no, we're going to be successful, but you've got to find different ways to fulfill yourself. You've got to find a way to contribute to life here in Pittsburgh. That's what we really want. Well, I took notes on that, and I learned a lot of other things from Coach Knoll as well. He was tremendous, and I followed along. And those things that he talked about, I think, apply to sports teams and building successful franchises, but they also apply to business, and they apply to life. He had many, many sayings that I wrote down over the years. And they started out right in that first meeting, such as talent wins games, but character wins championships. Champions don't do extraordinary things. They do the ordinary things better than everyone else. When it came to our team, you know, everyone's job is important, but no one here is indispensable. And then finally, I remember writing one down where he said, you win with fundamentals, but the first three letters of fundamentals are F-U-N, so we don't want to take the fun out of it either. Those were the kind of nuggets that I got from Coach for the next 2 years, and it was tremendous. I soaked that up. I just couldn't wait to get to practice in the mornings, and I just enjoyed everything about my time there. We won a Super Bowl my second year, but at the beginning of my third year, I got traded. I got traded from the Steelers, who were the Super Bowl champions, to a team that was in last place at the time. And then my fourth year, I got traded again, and I got released. So at 25 years old, Coach Knoll had been prophetic. If I'd have poured everything, my whole life into football, I was now leaving the game 4 years later, and I would have been very, very disappointed. But I wasn't. I had learned some other things and learned from my mom especially that it's not what you do in life, it's how you do things that God really cares about. So I was sitting there at my house trying to figure out what I was going to do now. And Coach Knoll came to the rescue once again. He called me and he said, I'd like you to join my coaching staff. I love the way you prepare. I love your communication skills. I think you could be good at this job if you decide you want to try it. So I went to work on the coaching staff. I got to work 8 more years for Coach Knoll, and it was a tremendous blessing because now in the 8 years on the staff, I was not just learning the what to do. When I was a player, Coach would say, do something, and I would do it because he was the boss. But now he was instructing me on why it was important to do things this way. And I learned the whys as well as the whats, and it was just tremendous. Two things that he told me that really impacted me for the next 28 years in my coaching career. The very first day I walked in the office and I joined the staff, I told him, I said, I had not coached before. I really don't know what I'm supposed to do. What is my job? What is it that you want me to do? And he told me something that stayed with me to this day. He said, Tony, your job as a coach is to help your players play better. And it was so simple. But as I thought about that at that moment, sitting in his office, I realized why I enjoyed playing for him so much and why he was such a great head coach, because he never felt like he was the one in charge. He never tried to act like he was the boss or that he was smarter than everyone, that he came up with these great game plans. No, he felt like his job was to help all 47 players be the best that they could be. And if he did that, we're going to be successful. And so I learned right away that my job was to learn about my players, find out about them, find out their strengths, their weaknesses, try to help them improve on their weaknesses, try to maximize their strength, but help them be better every day. And that's what I did for the next 28 years. The second thing that he told me that stood out and stayed with me was he was talking about future opportunities. He said, you'll have many chances to move in your career. You'll have chances to go places. You'll get offered different jobs. So let me just tell you, never take a job based on job title or how much money you're going to make. Take your next job based on who you're going to work for, who you're going to work with, and what you're going to learn. And as I heard that, I thought back to my original decision to come to Pittsburgh as a player. It wasn't based on money. It wasn't based on the position they were going to give me. It was based on what I could learn, who I could be with, and who I could play for. And I thought, man, that makes a lot of sense. So in my career, I always tried to base my decisions that way and not worry about the things that maybe the world would tell you are important, but focus on things that really are important. So those 8 years with Coach Knoll launched me on the next 20 years of my life, which was getting to become a head coach. And it was a great career, something I really enjoyed. The downside of my coaching career was I never got to start my own business like I thought I'd do as a 17-year-old. But the upside is that I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed life tremendously. And I did use so many of those things I learned at the Carlson School of Business. I used the knowledge of how to build successful situations. And that starts with creating a winning atmosphere. And how do you do that? Well, all those management skills and management lessons, they came to fruition. Number one, creating that team atmosphere, no matter what the situation is. Building a place where everyone comes to work and feels like they can contribute, that the team and the team doing well is the most important thing, much more important than individual statistics, than individual pay, anything like that. How is our team doing? Sounds very easy, but it's hard to create sometimes, but that was always my focus. Secondly, having a very, very simple philosophy that's easy to understand, but one that you could get buy-in from everybody. The third thing I learned from Coach Knoll that, again, stayed with me my whole career, instruction and encouragement is better than intimidation and criticism. I know football now, it's very, very popular to look at these shows like Hard Knocks and these reality shows that show a lot of coaching staffs in the face of players and just really motivating them out of fear. And one thing I learned in my career, fear is not a great motivator. Fear doesn't last long. In fact, it only lasts until that fear disappears. Then you've got to come to a different motivation. But Coach Knoll was a teacher and an instructor. Another one of his favorite sayings was, pressure is what you feel when you don't know what to do. So our job as coaches was to instruct our players, to teach them what to do and how to do it. And if we did that very well, they wouldn't feel a lot of pressure. And in those big moments, they'd be able to perform. So instructing, encouraging, building people up, in my way of thinking, was always better than trying to motivate by fear or criticism. Of course, being a leader, I felt like my job was to help people. And as I moved up the ladder from a position coach to a defensive coordinator, where I was in charge of half the team, to finally the head coach, I never changed that idea that if I could help my players be not only better players, but be better men off the field as well, then I was going to do my job and I was going to get the most out of our group. And then the last thing that I think was so important to me, maybe the most important thing in my entire career, was realizing and understanding that the goal was not just to win championships, but the goal was to also make Tampa a better place to live, to make Indianapolis a better place to live, to realize that our team and our individual players were going to be role models for so many young people. And as Coach Knoll said, don't make the job, don't make football our whole life, but find what our true life's work was going to be and motivate that way. So that's the background that I've worked with. And I know we have this seminar that's really focused on leading in today's atmosphere and how do you lead in crisis and critical situations. And I know we'll have some questions on that. But I wanted to give you that background to what I believe and what shaped me as we lead into the questions. So thank you very much.
Tony, I just want to say I was frantically writing when you were speaking. You didn't see me. There were so many nuggets there that I felt that I had to put down. But, before I start asking Tony a couple of questions, again, I want to add my welcome to all of our alumni, our friends, and of course, all of the fans of Tony Dungy, who are, have signed in from literally all over the world today, Tony. This is a huge testament to your, how popular you have been with our community, as well as, just your leadership, your style of leadership as you've gone forward.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was so excited. I actually got some notes from some of my classmates and other alums that, hey, I'm going to be tuning in today. So it's awesome to be with everyone. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And I just want to, maybe kick off with, there are just so many nuggets that I've been writing down. But, I love what your mother said about not what you do, but how you do it. But I know one of the things, and, Mark Coyle also spoke about that, was this whole idea that you believe that kindness isn't weakness. And it's rather, it generates devotion and results in success. I just want to kind of get a sense of how did you come to that understanding and how do you practice it on a day-to-day basis?
Well, again, I think my training from my parents, I saw them as teachers, and I saw them really just do their best to help their students and to do the right thing and to be kind to everybody that they came across. And my mother used to say, it doesn't take any talent, it doesn't take any ability to be nice to people. That is easy to do, and we should all strive to do that. And I think my parents were some of the kindest people that I ever met, and I saw how that held them in good stead. So I wanted to practice that. But as you move up the ladder in football, and I'm sure it's the same way in business, sometimes it is looked at as a negative. Oh, he's too nice. She's too nice. I don't know if they could be tough enough. And I faced that in my career. I was actually at the University, or not at the University of Minnesota, but with the Minnesota Vikings in the mid-90s. And we were doing very well. And people were saying, well, Tony Dungy might be a head coach. And I would go on these interviews and talk to owners and general managers, and I wouldn't get the job. And everybody was saying, well, you've got to show them that you can be tougher. That's the criticism of you. You're not a tough enough guy. And I remember thinking, do I really need to change who I am? Or can I just show people that, you know what? You don't have to be this caricature of a person. You don't have to be the stereotypical bad guy to be successful. So I made a point that I wasn't going to change. I wasn't going to give up my Christian beliefs. And when I eventually did get the chance, I think I was able to show people that, you know what, being kind is not going to deter you from being successful.
That's fantastic, Tony. I mean, it's just, again, this realization that it's that kindness is easy, and also that leadership, there isn't just one style that works. I think that's a huge lesson as well. And, thanks for sharing that.
You know, I'll give you one other story on that. I was interviewing with an NFL team, and mm-hmm. the interview was going really well. And the owner asked me the last question. He said, well, I've read about you. I know you don't use profanity. I hear you don't raise your voice much. We've got a high testosterone group of guys here. How in the world are you going to get them under control? And I said, well, probably the same way my dad did. I'm going to show them that I really love them, that I care about them, that I know what I'm talking about. And I think we'll develop this mutual respect and a feeling for each other that, you know, they'll want to follow me. And the guy looked right across the table at me and he said, I don't think that'll work in the NFL. And I didn't get the job. But years later, when I was a successful head coach, that gentleman came back to me and he said, you know, I didn't think that could work, but you showed me that it can.
That is fantastic. Also, I mean, your recommendations that, you know, don't look for position or salary, but figure out, you know, who you can learn from and what you can, you know, and who you're going to be working with. I mean, that is such great advice to our, you know, to our students who are going out into the, you know, into the world as well. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
I have a slightly sort of maybe a question for these times. I mean, whether you like it or not, Tony, you are a huge, huge, huge role model to lots of young people who are coming through college, and particularly to our, you know, Black students and underrepresented minority students who are, I mean, you know, it's heartbreaking, but they're hurting at this time. And we are all hurting, but they're hurting particularly badly. And I want to just ask you, you know, what advice would you give us? You know, all of us who work with students from maybe underprivileged backgrounds, but also, you know, underrepresented minorities, Black students, we are trying to sort of make them be the best that they can be, as you have done all your coaching life. And what advice can you give us as, you know, as teachers, as people who, as, and, you know, many of our alumni are employing these students in internships and so on. So what advice would you give us on how best we can support our college-age students, and particularly our Black students?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for all students, but particularly the minority students, is to keep encouraging them and keep talking about possibilities. That's one thing I remember from my dad. He always used to say, don't let anyone else define you. You decide what you want to do, what you can do, and don't let anyone tell you that you can't. My dad grew up in the segregation era, and I remember him telling me that he wanted to enlist in the Air Force in World War II, but the Air Force was segregated. And he said, you know what? We had to teach ourselves to fly. So he went down to a small little outpost in Tuskegee, Alabama, and became one of the Tuskegee Airmen because he was not going to let anybody say, you can't do something. So I would say that's the biggest thing. Don't be defined by society. Don't let anybody else tell you what you can do. The sky is the limit, especially you put your faith in the Lord and say, you know what, God, you take me where I'm supposed to go.
What a great message, Tony. I hope, you know, all our students get to hear it. It's just, you know, it's really, truly, truly inspiring what you're saying about don't let anyone else define you, just define yourself, and don't let others set your boundaries. And that is, I think, fantastic.
Yeah, and we don't know what's going to happen. When I was a student at the University of Minnesota, there were zero African-American coaches in the NFL. So I couldn't sit there and look and say, well, that's my role model. I'm going to be a head coach because this guy is or that guy is. But 10 years later or 15 years later, I needed to be ready and I needed to have my credentials in place. And because I did, I got the opportunity. So again, don't let the world tell you what you cannot do.
That is fabulous advice, Phil. Thank you for that. You know, I loved your earlier comment also about how it was the management classes that got you going. Being a management professor myself, that spoke straight to my heart, you know, about everything about organizations, about teamwork. And finally, we all know it's all about the people, right? It's everything is about the people. And you understand team chemistry better than anyone else. I mean, you've, as a head coach, you've built sports teams to become winning teams. And, you know, the whole idea of teams is so relevant in business settings as well. What lessons do you think you can share with us from your experience of managing teams?
I think the biggest lesson I learned, again, was from Coach Knoll, where it was not to, just to get a collection of talent, not to get the best parts and put that all together, but get people working together. And the best individuals aren't necessarily going to be the best team, but how can we get everybody to buy into what we're doing, to put your individual goals below the team goals and come together? And I just would always preach that we can't look at it as if I'm the most important one. We've got to be together and unified. And if we are, we'll be successful. And that's really important. Everybody's job is important, but nobody's indispensable.
That's again, great, great advice. I mean, that the team is more than individuals, and, you know, that you know, I think you have to also select for people who are willing to be team players. You know, it's such an important part of the, you know, of business teams as well. I think that's a great lesson. And finally, I think, you know, this is a time when, you know, with the pandemic on and everything else that's going on around us, there's so much uncertainty. And I think people are feeling really stressed out about all this uncertainty and how we're going to get through this, and, you know, and all of the adversity that people are facing as well, economic adversity, health adversity, you know, and I'm just a perfect kind of storm, if you will. You know, how, I know you've been through adversity, and, you know, and you gave us some examples of how you kind of made, you know, things didn't work out quite the way you know, thought they would. So what helped you pivot? What made, you know, what would you again suggest for people who are trying to tackle these kinds of challenges at this time?
Probably two thoughts. Number one, don't spend a lot of time worrying about what you cannot control. Focus on the things that you can control and do those the best you can. That's going to be the number one thing that you can do to make things better. And then secondly, again, I go back to my faith, that you can't just look at a situation and say, oh, because we're unsure or because we're going to be online school this year because of the pandemic, that's going to make everything terrible. Well, no, not necessarily. How can God use that? And how can we move forward and have faith that it's still going to be okay? All the disappointments that I had ended up leading me to something better than I would have thought of. And that's, I think, the way we have to approach it.
Again, terrific lesson, Tony. And I, you know, I really appreciate your deep spirituality and your, you know, and the faith that things, you know, that everyone is working to try make things as good as they can be. And that's certainly true at the university and at the Carlson School. You know, we are trying to give our students the very best experience, no matter what. So I think at this point, maybe I'll turn it over to Mark. I know he has some athletics questions, which I'm not.
I didn't think I was supposed to get athletic questions. I thought this was a Carlson Business School, but we'll take some. Yeah.
Well, hey, Coach, it's so great to hear you and your thoughts and your experiences. And as we shared before the call started, you know, the last time I saw you were on the field recognizing you when you're inducted to the Hall of Fame. And you were so touched by that moment as the Gopher Faithful gave you that standing ovation. And obviously, you know, the impact that you've had with Carlson, with our campus. And I hope you know how appreciative we are of how you represent Carlson School of Management and our athletic department, our university. And, you know, my question for you is the first one is, selfishly, I remember when I was at the University of Kentucky as the deputy athletics director, the number two person. And then I made that transition to become the athletic director at Boise State, my first job. And I tell people that I went from being the most popular person in the athletic department when I was the number two person to becoming the AD. And now all of a sudden you're the one getting tackled. Walk us through, you know, your thought process when you made that transition, because you were a successful assistant coach, successful coordinator. And then when you made that transition to the head coaching job at Tampa, walk us through some of the lessons you learned during that transitional period.
Well, one of the things I learned is you can never be fully prepared. You think, hey, when I become the athletic director, when I become the head coach, I'm going to do this, this, and this. I've got a lot of training. I'm going to have everything together. Well, things always come up that you didn't expect. And so realizing that you're not prepared for everything, you don't have all the answers, I think that's the number one thing. And then number two is, who are you going to rely on? I think a lot of times when we move up, we feel like, okay, I've got to be the one who's out front. I've got to be the voice. I've got to make the decision. And we kind of shut out people that can help us. The Bible talks about having many wise counselors. And I'm in total belief in that. Some of the best people that I've been around are the people that could listen the best and take in all the information, still make the decision, and still, you know, be the one that's going to put their stamp on it. But you know what? I'm gonna get input from a lot of people and not just make these decisions on an island.
Yeah, well, great answer. And Coach, I really respect when you talked about, you know, obviously when you're in the NFL, the goal is to win that Super Bowl, and you felt in your heart your goal is to make Tampa a better city, to make Indianapolis a better city. And there's no doubt you impacted several people on your staff who became head coaches, whether it be Mike Tomlin, Herm Edwards, Coach Caldwell. How did you prepare them when they were working underneath you? What skill set did you try to pass on to them so when they made that transition to become a successful coach that you felt they were prepared as much as they could be?
I thought that was really important, Mark. You know, Coach Knoll always talked about your job is helping people be better, helping your players, but also helping your staff be the best they could be. And I tell you what, I learned that from Denny Green. When I was with the Vikings, those 4 years, Denny Green poured into me. He knew that I had a chance to be a head coach. He let me in on some of the meetings that normally an assistant coach wouldn't be in. He explained some of his decisions. Hey, here's why I'm making a quarterback change. What would you do in this situation? He allowed me to do a lot of press conferences where some head coaches would say, no, I want to be the voice and I want to be the only voice we're hearing. Well, he knew at some point I was going to have to do press conferences. So he gave me that opportunity. I couldn't thank him enough for how he built into me. And so when I became the head coach, I wanted to do the same thing. When I recognized that there were guys with leadership skills, I wanted to allow them to be the leaders and to help them develop that and help them grow. So it was very, very intentional. And one of the things that I'm proud of, that lineage of guys who, you know, have gone to Super Bowls and done well.
Yeah, well, again, it's a great testimony to your leadership and your philosophy and how you treat people with respect and kindness and again, pay it forward, which is just a great tribute to you and how you manage your personal and professional career. And I know they're very grateful for the work you've done with them. And I know we have many, many people who have questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Amy. And Amy, if you'd like to start to ask some of the questions that our listeners have, and I'm sure Coach would be happy to take those on and provide further wisdom for all of us. So Coach, thank you for your comments. And I'll turn it over to Amy now.
Yes, thank you. Coach, we have so many questions for you today. So we're going to start with one that's been pretty popular. What is the most difficult decision you've had to make in your career, and how did you approach that decision?
Wow, yeah, I'll tell you, the toughest decision I had to make, and probably one of my only regrets of my career, early on in Tampa, we had a good season going in 1999. We were one game away from the Super Bowl, and we lost the game 11-6, and our owners were very, very upset at our offensive coordinator, Mike Shula, and they said, we need to fire Mike Shula. If we'd have scored one touchdown, we'd have been in the Super Bowl. And I knew it wasn't Mike's fault. He had done a great job. He'd done everything that I asked, and I wasn't going to do it. I just didn't think it was right. But then I had the option or what could happen in that situation, the owners could fire all of us and then we'd have the whole staff out of a job. And Mike came to me and said, hey, don't let me be the cause of everybody losing their job. I want to resign. And I ended up taking Mike's resignation, and I knew immediately it was the wrong thing to do. I didn't feel like I stood up for my assistant coach. I didn't think that he was responsible for us not getting to the Super Bowl. I just knew it was a mistake. And so that taught me that, hey, if you preach togetherness, you preach unity, and we're all in this together, we've got to stay together. And even though I knew, you know, hey, my owners are the bosses, and I do have to respect their authority, I just realized at that point I had to show more loyalty to my staff.
Thank you. We've had lots of questions about diversity and inclusion. So I will go with this one. In your organizations, how do you think about building a culture of both diversity and inclusion?
Well, I think number one, it's really important because I think it helps you be the best you can be. If you don't take in all the information, if you don't use all your tools, you're never going to be as good as you could be. So I think it's important. That was something that was very important to me. Because I came up in an era when we didn't have a lot of diversity in the NFL on the sidelines. And so when I became a head coach and I had a chance to build my own staffs and hire people, I wanted to make sure that we had a diverse staff, that we had a group that could reach all of our players. And I wanted to make sure that talented minority coaches got an opportunity. So that was something that was intentional for me. And I think we need to do that. But in this day and age, it's not only important because it's socially the right thing to do. It's important if you want to build a good organization. If you're only using 70% of your resources or 90% of your resources, you may still win, but you're not going to be as good as you could be. And I think as a leader, your responsibility is to be the best that you can be. And that means utilizing everyone.
Thank you so much. One of the participants here is asking, all of us face challenging times where leadership is very lonely and the world seems to be against you. What tools have you found to help you best navigate those periods of time in your life?
Yeah, as a leader, you're always going to be faced with tough decisions, decisions that you may not even be totally sure in your mind that you're right. It may be 51-49. And how do you make sure you're doing the right thing? And you also know that when you make that decision, everyone's looking at you. Even though it may be a group decision, you got input from your whole staff, ultimately it's your responsibility. And that's tough. That's not easy. For me, my answer was to always pray in those situations. Lord, give me the guidance, give me the discernment, give me the wisdom. I want to make the right decision for our entire group. And help me with that, and then help me be strong and, you know, stick to those guns. Just like with the Mike Shula situation I described, I knew in my mind it wasn't the right thing to do, but I didn't stick to my guns. And then I ended up making a bad decision. So for me, praying about it became something that was that I always did and helped me in those tough times and tough decisions.
Thank you. We have a question here, which I think a lot of us are going to be interested in. So as a family person and a large, challenging job with coaching, how do you navigate and balance the work-life balance between children and family in your career?
Very, very tough in the football world. A lot of time is spent at the office, especially in the fall, and the family does get shortchanged. And one of the things that happened to me early on, we got to Tampa, I had some guys on my staff that kind of felt the same way. We'd have talks after work about how things were going and how we didn't spend as much time with our families as our dads did. We went to an organization here in Tampa called Family First, and we asked for some tips that we could get to help us be better and utilize our time better. But I think just knowing how important that is, you have to build that time in. And as I tell people, as football coaches, we're meticulous on our schedules. We build practice schedules. We build off-season schedules. We've got to build family time into the schedule and schedule it. And it's not easy, but you have to do it. And for me, it became Friday night. That was our kids' time, and that was going to be sacred. And I remember coaching the Colts and going to the Super Bowl. And the Friday before the Super Bowl, as we always did, I asked the kids what they wanted to do. And they wanted to go to the NFL Experience, which is like a giant, you know, county fair. So Friday night before the Super Bowl, we're out there and people are looking around and said, that looks like the coach of the Colts, but well, how could he be here? What's he doing there? But that's what my kids wanted to do. That was our routine. So even though it was the Super Bowl, they knew that's what we were going to do.
Thank you. We have a football fan here who is asking, what is the toughest game you played while at Minnesota?
Oh, gosh. I'll tell you, the toughest one for me was 1973, my 18th birthday. I got my actual first start at quarterback against the University of Nebraska. Nebraska, I think, was number three in the country at the time. They got the opening kickoff, and they scored 7-0. They were ahead. We got the ball back, and we scored. I actually scored the touchdown, and the game is tied 7-7. I remember going off on the sideline saying, yeah, Nebraska, they're not that tough, and this college football is pretty easy. My second drive of my career, right, we've scored, and we're going to win this game. And the end of the game, it was 49-7 for their favor. We never scored again. They scored 41 points or whatever, 42 more points. And I remember saying, yeah, this college football is a little harder than it looks. But that was a tough one, losing 49-7 on my 18th birthday.
I can imagine. We have a question here is, how have you dealt with failures and losses? And do you still have mentors? And if so, how did you find them?
Yes, dealing with failures and losses, to me, that's the great thing about sports. No one goes undefeated. You have to learn how to bounce back. You have to learn how to overcome adversity. And you realize that losses are temporary. Failures are temporary unless you dwell on them. So for me, it was, okay, whether we win or lose the game, let's go back, check our performance out. What did we do well? What do we need to improve on? What can we do to make sure we play better next week than we did this week? So even games that we would lose, that was my approach. Let's analyze it and see how we can get better. That's something I learned from my dad. Don't dwell on the negative. How are you going to make the situation better? And a lot of that does involve having mentors. And I certainly did. As I was growing up, Coach Noel was a great mentor to me. As I came up the ladder, I had other guys, players and coaches, and I leaned on them heavily. I think I'm probably now a mentor to more people than I'm getting mentored, but I still have guys that I call when situations come up. Hey, how would you handle this? I'm going through this situation. I've got to make this decision. I just wanted to call you and find out. And I still have a number of guys I can call and get that information. So I think it's critical not only to have that in your life where somebody can talk to you, but also to be that person for someone else and help them.
Mm-hmm. So we have another Gopher football fan here, Coach. If you could recall what the coaching or locker room experience was like before the win over number one Michigan in 1977.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. That was actually, I was a rookie with the Pittsburgh Steelers then. And we had lost to Michigan the year before. Now I'm in Pittsburgh. Michigan's number one. They're heavy favorites. One of my best friends on the Steelers was a Michigan grad by the name of Jim Smith. So we put the natural bet on the game. He said, oh, there's no way the Gophers can win. And Marion Barber and those guys were fantastic that day. One of the biggest upsets in Minnesota history. And I was reveling from the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room that day. So, yeah, that was a big moment in Gopher history. I wish I could have been there. But that was actually my rookie year in the NFL.
Thank you. Someone was asking about bringing politics into professional athletics, football or NBA. What is your perspective on that is the question.
You know, I think I'm not one that shies away from that. I think talking politics in any setting is fine. And you just have to do it in a courteous, professional way. People say don't bring religion and politics into your workplace. I disagree with that. As a Christian, I'm going to be that way. I'm going to represent Jesus Christ everywhere I go, whether it's in my business, on the football field, off the field, at home, doing a Zoom call like this, that's going to be who I am. Politics, this time of year especially, it's out there. So to say, well, we can't talk about it, we shouldn't talk about it, to me, that's not very smart. Now, there's ways to do it, and politics and religion can be divisive, and it can cause friction, but it doesn't have to. I think we should be able to state our opinions, talk about our beliefs, do it in a right way, and you know, be informative and not be combative about it, and it's going to be fine.
In that context, Tony, there was also a question earlier on of, would you consider running for public office?
And I will answer that with a very quick no. I remember I was on a call like this with Colin Powell at one time years ago. And I remember asking him, oh, we need you, General Powell, to run for president. You'd be fantastic. And he said, well, no, I can't do that, because right now I can say something, and if it's a good idea, everybody will say, oh, that's a good idea. If I run for president and say the same thing, automatically 50% of the people will say that's a bad idea before they even hear it. So I think I'm better off where I am.
Well, I think that a lot of your fans will be disappointed with that answer. But I know there was also another question earlier on about, how do you deal with conflict in teams?
I think you really do have to try to diffuse conflict. Mm-hmm. Some things are small and they take care of themselves. But if they don't, I think the leader, the head coach, the veteran players, the leaders on the team, you have to go in and say, okay, how can we get through this and still be the best we can be? How can we put the team goals first and work ourselves through this conflict? And I think the worst thing you can do is ignore it many times and feel like it's going to go away. So we may have different beliefs. We may not see things the same way, but how can we resolve it to the point where we can still be good teammates and we can still focus on one goal? And that was always the way that I tried to handle it. Okay, side A, side B, how can we break this down, put it apart, so we may still be on A and B sides at the end of the day, but we're coming together to focus on the goal.
Amy, are there any other questions that?
Yeah, we have a student here, Tony, and it says, for those working in sports or who plan to have a career in the industry, what advice would you give to staying focused during the pandemic when there are few jobs available and not much opportunity for those of us that just graduated?
Yeah, that can always be tough. I would say, number one, don't get discouraged. Plan for this pandemic to be over and plan for jobs to be available. And when that job comes available, make sure you're ready. And so your focus now shouldn't be on, well, there's not much out there, but turn your focus to, when something does become available, I want to be ready. And that's, I think, the best thing, to really realize, hey, God's going to get us through this. And it's somewhere down the road, we're going to get back to normal. So let me try to do what I can do now to get myself prepared. And I tell people that all the time when they say, hey, I want to go into NFL coaching. What can I do? Keep learning, keep growing, keep researching. Work with people, do everything you can, even if it means volunteering, whatever it takes to get that knowledge and put yourself in position. And then when the job opens up, you're going to be qualified, you're going to be ready, and you'll get hired.
This has been so terrific, Tony. And I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and insights with us. I mean, it's so much about your personality, your humility, your ability to lead with humility that is coming through. And I just, there's so many lessons that we can take away from what you've discussed today. I think this has been one of the most inspiring conversations you've had.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks to Dean Zaheer and Tony Dungy. You can find more information about this podcast, including previous episodes, on our website, z.umn.edu/boardroom. I'm Jamie Plusser from the Carlson School of Management. Thanks for listening.